I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough. And it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us to war with Iran. Which leads me to conclude that if, in fact, compromise is not coming, that the traditional way of America gets to war is what would be best for U.S. interests. Some people might think that Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II, as David mentioned. You may recall we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. Some people might think Mr. Wilson wanted to get us into World War I. You may recall he had to wait for the Lusitania episode. Some people might think that Mr. Johnson wanted to send troops to Vietnam. You may recall we had to wait for the Gulf of Tonkin episode. We didn't go to war with Spain until the USS, until the Maine exploded. And may I point out that Mr. Lincoln did not feel he could call out the Federal Army until Fort Sumter was attacked, which is why he ordered the commander at Fort Sumter to do exactly that thing which the South Carolinians had said would cause an attack. So if, in fact, the Iranians aren't going to compromise, it would be best if somebody else started the war. One can combine other means of pressure with sanctions. I mentioned that explosion on August 17th. We could step up the pressure. I mean, look, people, Iranian submarines periodically go down. Someday one of them might not come up. Who would know why? We can do a variety of things if we wish to increase the pressure. I'm not advocating that, but I'm just suggesting that this is not a either-or proposition. It's just sanctions has to succeed or other things. We are in the game of using covert means against the Iranians. We could get nastier at that.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant, independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
April 13th, Saturday, April 13th, 2024. Thank you for joining me today. For the second time, for those that missed, we already covered some other stuff not related around foreign policy. I thought it was very important for us to come back and discuss what has happened in between Iran and Israel. And it's obviously a very, very important discussion. And I think it's important to say right out of the gate, because of the focus of today and other things we were doing, and that this is like a developing story right in this moment, I felt it was important that we come on, and I'd already been organizing and researching all day, but important to come on and discuss like as this happens, which usually is not necessarily what The Last American Vagabond does, to try to jump out and be the first to say a certain thing. It's more important to me to be researched and fleshed out and understand something to come out and give you the nuance to it and the deeper parts of it. I'm only saying that in the sense that, which I'm going to do today as best I can, is to tell you that this was something that I wanted to organize for you. And it's going to be, I have limited time actually tonight, less than I thought I did. So ultimately I'm going to try to give you the best of the information that I see, discuss a couple of other important topics around it, but I guarantee this is going to be a developing story into tomorrow and the next so many days, even much larger than as it pertains to just Iran and Israel. I think clearly, as like the clip we showed to start there, it clearly shows there's a much larger discussion here. I mean, as I'm sure everyone's bringing back up the seven countries in 5 years and Clark and the conversation, that clearly this has been a plan. That doesn't have to mean this is even connected. At the very least, I think it's obvious that even if it's not, that this is going to be a never let a crisis go to waste kind of a scenario. But it's just important to remember that both Israel and the United States have been desperately trying to create what's happening right now. No matter what you think about it, that is an absolute fact. Now, let's talk about today, what happened before this, what's going on right now, what our predictions were. I'll take you kind of through my thought process of, you know, I'm still at this point, I'll tell you right now, I think it's pretty clear that this is happening, that Iran is at the very least claiming this. And I only say that because I think it's interesting the way this is going down. And Robert and I were talking about this. I'll read you some of his thoughts about why this happened the way that it did. It doesn't actually make much. This is what I said before the last show, before even this, the drones made it to where I guess they were scheduled to go to. It just seems different and it seems odd, and it doesn't seem the way that Iran classically has responded. Doesn't mean that's not, there's just more, maybe more to this than I realize, or that their thought process, or maybe they just aren't as strategic as I thought. You know, there's all these different possibilities, but something about this feels off. Again, that doesn't mean it's not what it looks like, but it's something strange in the way this went down. And I think one of the possibilities, and I don't think this is the most likely, one of them could simply be that Iran sees a strategic interest in claiming whatever isn't their fault. Like, let's just say hypothetically, this ends up being a manufactured thing coming from other groups that were like Hezbollah firing rockets that were claimed and attributed to Iran that wasn't them, or completely manufactured by the U.S. and Israel to blame Iran, which again, I don't think that's the most likely. I think it's pretty clear Iran is attacking. But it's interesting to think about what drives them to do that, for Iran to jump up and say it's in our interest to just claim the thing that they're trying to frame us with for another reason. I just want to throw that out there because I thought that was an interesting. I always try to think of the different possibilities that most people won't even discuss. And again, to be for the third time clear, that's not what I think is actually happening. But we always have to factor in other possibilities. And I think the idea of the building false flag discussion, and that this doesn't really align with what is expected, why Iran would follow through with what apparently the U.S. and Israel have been broadcasting to the world they're about to do, it just seems odd. But all that is said, all the evidence points in the direction that Iran has claimed this, is carrying this out, and is obviously, the important part, justified in doing so in regard to the recent attack on their consulate, which was more so than Iran attacking Israel, the bombing of their consulate was a much larger overstep, or just a much larger breach of international law. Countries have attacked each other historically many different times. Wars have happened. But the idea of crossing the line into a consulate, bombing people who are part of a diplomatic mission, regardless of what they said, that's a huge, huge step that has destroyed a lot of diplomatic international law, as the perception or the whether countries care about it or not. And I'll include, I'm glad I just remembered this, an article from Derek they just recently put up around this exact point about the consulate that was just bombed. And right after that, Ecuador seized or broke into a Mexican embassy, or I believe it was the embassy, and ultimately took a prisoner that was seeking asylum and was given asylum by the president of Mexico. And right after it, and there's also other people that are saying because of this, we can now do that. I mean, it's already kind of spinning out. It's really an alarming step. So I'll include that for you. And overall, do you think that this, let's just say ultimately Iran is responding to provocations by Israel? There obviously is more to this story that goes well before this. And that includes both incessant, repeated Israeli attacks on sovereign areas, including Syria and Iranian locations within any number of areas, and then including on Iranian territory, of not just the consulate, assassinating their scientists, assassinating their generals. And then, of course, Iran actions much, much, much more reserved and far less in against Israel as well throughout the years. So there's going to be a battle now, as Israel's clearly trying to do, to frame this as it's only Iran that started everything. What we ever did was all self-defense. And we have to see that Iran is the reason everything's crazy no matter what, even though that doesn't add up in any way. If you look at the history, there's obvious reality. If you want to look at what's going on around the world that creates destabilization, it's obviously primarily the U.S. government that's caused a lot of this destabilization. Academics and history, it's obvious. And the only thing stopping us acknowledging that in some circles are two-party politics and politics in general. But then, of course, you have the Israel overlap with that, which I personally feel, and I think the evidence is clear, is one of the largest reasons the U.S. is doing that. And so you can clearly see that there's a very obvious destabilization. They're saving countries, seems to oddly leave them in ruins every single time. And then you can point out what Iran's doing. Now, sure, there's plenty of criticisms I have about Iran, their government, or any government for that matter, but are they stomping around the world, destroying countries? Are they invading things and murdering civilians? I mean, Israel and the U.S. government will tell you yes, and more than you even know. And we can't prove that, though. And it's all these shadowy secret things that we align or overlap or complete things that they can't prove. For instance, saying that the Ansarallah movement, that Hamas and Hezbollah are all just Iran, even though it's laughably wrong, it's provably incorrect, and they're clearly just aligned just like the U.S. is aligned with a lot of countries around the world. You don't just say they're all the U.S. government, even though you could make a fair argument about that. The point is clearly it's about conflation. And right now, they really want you to think that this Iranian government is the sole source of terrorism, even though, interestingly enough, they point to the ISIS organization as the biggest terrorism problem, but then weirdly note that ISIS keeps attacking Iran. So how exactly do you see Iran as the sole source of terrorism? It's all ridiculous. So, but that's all to say simply that there's more to this story. Now, let's get into one thing first about the USAID worker. It's very quick. I just wanted to highlight this because it shows you what we're dealing with here and then get into what Iran is responding to. So first of all, Lowkey just shared this. And At first, I actually wasn't sure. I thought, is this the same story from before that is kind of being reestablished with a new statement? No, it turns out it's not. Now, what's crazy about this is just, I mean, this was what? This, here's the actual story. This was on the 16th of 2023, on December. USAID contractor killed in Gaza. You know, it's a big deal. And it is, it should be. So was the first UN building or the first UN member or UN worker. Oh my God, that's crazy. And then in the second, third, fourth, 100th, now it's just like, oh, well, they're all Hamas. And everyone just looks the other direction. Well, this is a really big deal. And the interesting part about this, and we'll show it again in a minute, is Biden has said more than once, if you come after Americans, if you attack Americans, we'll come for you. I guess except when they're Palestinian, or except when they're doing things that aren't in interest of Israel, or accept and accept and accept, or only when Israel says, or however you want to look at it. It's pretty pathetic that right now you see the U.S. government once again acting in the interest of Israel at the expense of American interests. And this is one of many examples. You don't see them even talking about this right now. And this is the new story. Here's the actual report coming out from USAID. Statement by spokesperson Jessica Jennings, April 12th, 2024. USAID is devastated to learn that a staff member from USAID in the West Bank and Gaza and the mission therein was killed yesterday in Jaffa, in the West Bank. He was a dedicated member of our team for two decades. Right. I mean, what this shows you is the belligerent actions of Israel in Gaza and the West Bank with zero accountability. Even UN members, even USAID members, even seven foreign aid workers. And everyone's beginning to get really upset about it. Sure, glad you waited 6 months. And I'm talking about the corporate media conversation. But the reality is this keeps happening and nobody's doing anything about it. Here's the actual videos. I just want to make sure you saw that this really did happen. And the way that this goes down, there's no way you can deny the belligerence of this. So Lowkey reports about 16 hours ago, footage has emerged of an Israeli officer killing a 50-year-old Palestinian USAID employee yesterday in Jaffa. After shooting him 8 times, the officer calmly walked away. Now, for anybody out there that immediately goes, oh, he's Palestinian, so it doesn't matter. Well, thank you for revealing to everyone yet again why we realize what you are today. This one's from behind the car. Maybe you get a better shot. Better view. The amount of shots coming off, that's crazy. That last one especially, that's anger. That's hatred. I don't know how else
to pretend.
That's not protecting yourself. Now here's the next one. This shows the guy running away, aiming the gun at the man trying to film everything.
I've got me to run. Hold on. I don't have his bag.
Look at the guy. Here's my flip-flops. And a mask with the police. He's obviously part of what they're doing. You can see he's got an official shirt on. The guy's wearing shorts and flip-flops out there and just murdered a USAID worker. And all the other police appear to be doing is covering up and shouting people away. Just like U.S. police, it seems. Just unreal. This is, this was, what was he? Oh, that's right. This is a journalist for Haaretz. He says, documentation from the shooting incident in Jaffa, an off-duty police officer. Well, why is he wearing some kind of baklava then? Why is he covering his face? Maybe after he shot him? I don't know. But it says, in clothes and flip-flops, quarrels with a 50-year-old resident of the city who wears a helmet. Residents try to separate, move away, and then about 8 shots are heard. The dead man is well known in the city as an MDA volunteer. According to a police version, the policeman was slightly wounded by a knife. And every time this happens, even according to everybody else involved, that's not what happened. Every single time they had a knife or they had something else. And you know how many times we've proven that that turns out to be a blatant lie or the entire story is false, like with Shireen Abu Clay, where they just make it up? Or is that her name? It was Abu... I believe that was her name. Shireen, where they shot her. And she was a journalist, a U.S. citizen. And not only that, they lied about it. Then they said, no, it was Hamas. Think about this today. Then they said, oh, no, it was us, but it was a ricochet. Oh, no, we didn't ricochet. We shot her, but we thought she had a knife or whatever. And the story kept evolving. And then it became, yes, it was just an accident, but we didn't mean to. And then they attacked the funeral procession and were beating everyone in the legs while they were trying to carry the funeral or carry the casket. All on video. No provocation, just hatred. That's what we're dealing with. I mean, this is Haaretz. Here is John Hudson telling you a new internal memo from Samantha Power on the killing of USA. This is for guy who works for Washington Post. Basically a leaked memo internally about what they're saying. It says, it is with immense sadness that I share the devastating news that Jacob, a beloved member of USAID in the mission there, was killed near his home in Jaffa. Jacob was a 20-year-old veteran of USAID. His death comes as a huge shock to the West Bank and Gaza team, our entire USAID family. Jacob is a survivor of his mother and six and 11-year-old daughters, our teams in Washington. The bottom line, not a single mention of what happened. Why? Who's responsible? Because Samantha Powers is pretty obviously not on our side, I would argue, even though, I mean, there's a lot of things to argue. But of course, this is the point. If you harm an American, we will respond, Biden says. Well, obviously, this is only specific to certain locations and certain people and certain colors. Joe Biden said the strikes demonstrate to all those who might seek to do us harm that if you harm an American, we will respond. Just want to make sure you saw that he did say that. What about the 600 American Palestinians that are currently trapped? I guess we don't care about those ones. Or I guess the any number of other Palestinian conversations we could have, like the other U.S. member, U.S. citizens that have been killed already in Gaza, or the different aid workers that were U.S. I mean, it doesn't any more important, guys. A human life is a human life. The point is they care, or they claim to, more than anything else, and then still don't when it's just not the right kind of American. It really should make your skin crawl. Here's Ryan Grimm saying the last part is translated. Israel murdered a senior USAID employee, the agency run by Samantha Power, after he stopped on the side of the road and helped an injured person after a car accident, which appears to be the roundabout statement from everybody else other than Israeli police. It says the murdered man is an employee of the U.S. Embassy, United States Embassy, which, by the way, also makes him there's some kind of immunity there in regard to being working with the embassy. And he said when he tried to help a man lying on the road, it is not clear if he was wearing the uniform, he was shot with 8 bullets. And then just go, oh, he had a knife, though. That's what you get from the most moral army or the Israeli government in general. And again, realize this is not the first time even. And all your government could tell you about is Iran, bad guy. We fight for Israel or self-defense. That's all you get. Now, let's talk about that. Now, here's my process on this. Obviously, leading up to this, I felt very, very concerned this was going to be something other. And I still have a small part of my mind that wonders whether this is something different than what is being stated, just because of how transparent it all seems, the timing of it. Drones are on the way. They'll be here in a couple of hours. And as far as anybody I talked to, they were like, that's not how long that should take. Planes will take that long, but not drones. Everything about this seemed odd. Broadcasting what was about to happen. And clearly Iran can see this stuff too. They have Twitter accounts. It just doesn't seem like it adds up to me, but that doesn't mean that I'm right or not right. Doesn't mean that what they said happened is wrong. I think ultimately what they're saying seems to be the truth, but Tom Cotton came out on the 11th and said, Israel's under threat of imminent attack by Iran. Well, the reality is before we freak out about the terrorist attack from Iran is that, as you know, Israel bombed the U.S. consulate building of the embassy in Syria, which is a huge, huge, huge overstep or just crime, international law. And so when they come out and try to frame this as they're about to be attacked and we have to defend them, it's just insulting to everybody's intelligence while you're literally watching the same government carry out apparently 6 months plus of nonstop defense. seemingly killing 45,000 individuals in this defense. It's insulting. And now they bomb somebody illegally in every sense of the word. Nobody argues otherwise. And then immediately those same people stand up and say, Israel's under attack. We have to defend them because this is a terror attack. So this is my point about all of this, about the food and the conversation of the U.S. government representatives that are coming out and just going, they don't have a responsibility to give Palestinians anything. They all know that's wrong, which means not only are they lying to you about basic international law, they're lying to you about the history of Israel. They're lying to you about things that keep people dying. It's just a really big thing that you have to see. And on top of that, these same people, and Tom Cotton was one of them, by the way, gaslighting for genocide and starvation, now coming out and continuing to do the same thing. Completely ignoring the most obvious breach of international law that we've seen in a long time. The bombing of the consulate building and acting like it doesn't matter. They know what they're doing. These people are very, very dangerous, not on your side. Now, I wrote when this, and this was again 12th, so yesterday, Zero Hedge came out and said, the IDF and Mossad approved plans for an attack on Iran in the event that Israel would come under attack from Iranian territory. So again, kind of shoving this down the road, and a lot of things, I'm going to read you what Robert wrote about this, but what it's interesting to see that ultimately knowing that this, but I guess the point would come down to whether the different factions were deciding in Iran. Is it more important to push harder in hopes that they back down, or is our not action going to hurt us more? And I think it's obvious at this point that Israel's made it clear that they're going to keep pushing. So it's almost like they kind of forced them into a corner, and they have the legal justification to respond. And even then, it seemed like they were reluctant to, because they have been in the past. They've made that very clear. But I simply said, by saying this, and this is beforehand when I'm still very much on guard for a possible false flag situation, that they were already creating the preemptive narrative that should you see Israel attacking Iran, it's only because Iran attacked first. Whether or not you can verify that, as always, reactive, emotional, and belligerent, the opposite of Iran's responses even now. Which, by the way, right now as we're live, I mean, for all we know, Israel's already attacking something, which, again, would be what you would expect from Israel and the United States and most of the people we're talking about. Every time in the past, Israel has not done that, or Iran has not done that. And again, I'll read you what Robert said, which is important because that sets a very clear tone. And every time before, they've done the same thing. Iran is going to do this and that, and they didn't. So that's why this feels out of character, but maybe that's just one push too far. So here's what Ynet News said. IDF, Mossad approve Iran's strike plans. Just basically setting up the idea that this is going to be World War III, even though they're the ones that set the fire. And of course, what's interesting, I just think this is hilarious, is Glenn Klippenstein from the Intercept, just showing you how ridiculous, and again, same point I'm kind of making about the U.S. representatives just knowingly lying. It highlights a really dark and dangerous problem that's not just a couple of bad apples. It's like, it's the infrastructure. It's the same thing with the corporate media, and we all know that today. So here is this leading corporate media guy, Axios, and I'm obviously being facetious there. I don't believe they matter at all, who just breaks a story. Same thing that happens to us all the time. Scoop, he says. He wrote this on the 12th of April. Scoop, as in, he said, my story here at Axios, as if, and not a mention to a story that came out on the 10th on The Intercept that says the exact same thing. And the point is, it's quite obvious he just stole the information and acted like he broke it. And that's ridiculous. That's exactly what they do. And it's the same level. This is how the broken media field works. And a lot of people just accept that and do the same thing. And I'm trying to change that. A lot of us are. But what's hilarious, it's scoop. The point is, it says Iran has told the White House, this is in response to all that we just read, that if the U.S. defends Israel, which it seems like that's about to happen, or maybe it already is, against its forthcoming retaliation for the Damascus strike, so he's clearly framing it correctly, it will consider the U.S. a viable target. That's a big deal. And what do you think the U.S. government's going to do? Terrorism! Even though it's very clear, they've laid this out, and I'm going to show you what they actually said here. They're citing international law, and it's damn hard to see where they're wrong. But here's what he said, by the way, which, can you tell which part he left out? Interestingly, left out the part about the bombing of Damascus and the consulate. I wonder why. What a great journalist he is. It's just so sad. They're just so petty and childish and small, and they just can't be honest, and it's so very clear, and that they look down on you like you're somehow not as professional. It's just sad, isn't it? But here's Ben F. Freeman. This is all setting the tone. This is on the 12th. Iran has already attacked Israel. Israel is defending itself against genocidal Iranian regimes. This is before this happened, by the way. So they're just basically saying that other things that have happened. So anytime Hamas fires a rocket, they go and they want to. Iran did it. It's just a broad, abstract connection that has nothing other than they say they're connected. And even though you can show overlap, they're not the same thing. And even if they were literally sending things, which are, again, there's evidence of them weapons transfers. Because just like the U.S. and Israel and everybody else sheds things all over the world and act like that's just freedom. That's just all us democracy over here. And then anybody else doing the same in one of their bad guy areas, they go terrorism, weapons, arms traders, whatever, as opposed to whatever else they call it when they do it. It's all flowery over here. It's just dumb. And the idea that Russia and Iran and China and whatever else are all just inherently evil bad. And when they do the normal things, it becomes terrorism. Meanwhile, you turn around and I think they're all dangerous. You turn around and look at the person pointing at who's terrorism. And it's oddly interesting how they seem connected to all the real terrorism, right? That's the thing we need to start paying attention to. But what they're pointing out there is just claiming it's not that it wasn't the consulate, even though they don't mention that. That's what they're trying to undermine. It was that Iran's been doing this forever. Well, that doesn't even matter, by the way. Let's just say Iran has been attacking Israel every day for the last 40 years. It doesn't change the fact that the bombing of that consulate was still a huge, huge crime. That would change the dynamic of whether Israel can argue that they're on the defensive, but it still cannot ignore the huge overstep in regard to the consulate. And they don't want you talking about that. He says, do not think for a second that you can get away with saying Israel struck first. You see how desperate they were to come out and set this narrative? He writes for the Jerusalem Post. This is the kind of thing we've become accustomed to. Do you think this person knows that he's lying, or do you think, or just being dishonest about the time? I mean, I really don't know. I think today it's an interesting mix of the whole manufacturing consent, where some of the people just already believe these things so core to the core. They just choose to lie for certain things and not even know it. Here's another example. Former editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. They're all coming out. As rumors swirl, this is from the 11th, about whether, when, or how Iran will attack Israel, it's important to remember this. Iran has been attacking Israel every day since via its proxies. And there you go. Is Hamas, Hezbollah? Okay, well, first of all, Hamas, Gaza, is occupied, so they have a legal right to respond at any time, whether or not they're attacked. Hezbollah, Lebanon, is also occupied by Israel, so they also have a legal right for armed resistance, whether or not they're attacked. And Yemen is occupied by the United States and Saudi Arabia. You could argue there might be a murky idea of whether they can attack Israel directly, but is that what they're doing? Has Yemen attacked Israel, or are they bombing any ships that are dealing with them? And we're going to get to a point about that later in regard to the ship that was attacked or seized, rather. The point here is that you either, regardless of everything I just said, Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Ansarallah movement, which is the real name, not the Houthis, are not Iran. They're just not. And even the U.S. government has been forced to basically admit that over and over throughout the years. And yet they just keep doing it. And when they're pushed by Israel, weirdly, they just go right back to the talking points. I wonder why. It says the idea that it never needed a pretext is ridiculous. Very clearly just setting the tone. The airstrike, he says, targeting Iranian terrorists. This is on the 12th. And again, we're talking about generals and diplomats. So it just shows you the kind of, dehumanization, the kind of lack of integrity that you're finding from anybody standing out. And these are people that work for supposed journalists. And he calls them Iranian terrorist leaders, because to them, they're all terrorists, because that's what you do when you're fighting somebody you want to dehumanize. That's what the U.S. government does every time. Oh, but wait a minute. You want to make a deal with Israel? Fine, you're no longer terrorists. Hooray! Like with the Sudan, right? Don't have to do anything different. You just have to say you're on our side. Then we don't care anymore. Just like with ISIS or Al-Qaeda or Hayat Tahrir al-Sham or any number of other terrorist bad guys that suddenly become, okay, we don't look, what about Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden or all the groups that were literally working with the United States before they suddenly became the worst boogeyman in the world? Interesting thread that you can find through pretty much every big boogeyman you can find looking back. But he says, the airstrike targeting the Iranian consulate was a response to months, years, and decades of Iranian attacks on Israel. Well, that was my point. It doesn't matter. Even though what you're doing is conflating, that's why I showed this, all of the other responses by groups that you're occupying, bombing, threatening, raping, murdering, destabilizing, right? That's what they're responding to. It's like when they bombed the PMU in Iraq. under the guise that they're responding to Iran, which PMU is not. It's a part of the Iraqi military, which U.S. occupies, which even means some of the weapons they've supplied to Iraq have ended up in their hands. They bomb the PMU and they go, that's because Iran. And then the PMU, who doesn't care about that, or at least it's not what they're looking at that moment, they respond of their own. They attack because they're going, well, you can't bomb us. And then what does the U.S. do? Iran responded. No, that didn't happen. And so you got all these narratives about how Iran did this. It's not really what happened. Now, as I understand it, there's even reports that were being, the PMU was ultimately being told not to attack, you know, in regard to what's happening first. And the bottom line is, you could see the coordination is obviously there in regard to any of these resistance groups. And that goes well beyond the group they're pointing at to this day, right? We're talking about new groups now, new aspects of people that were once very recently on the side of the Israel-U.S. axis who have now said, we're done. This is too much. And now are standing up in support, saying you can't launch your attacks from here. A lot of these groups in the Middle East have now said that, even though they are still technically U.S. allies. You can't launch attacks from our area. Right. So what that shows you is that this resistance is not just the groups they're pointing to, and not all of them are suddenly Iran, but that's what they're doing. And the point here is that whether or not that was even accurate, the consulate was a crime. And so all they were really saying here is that we're allowed to commit crimes if you poke us first. That's exactly what the U.S. government does, exactly what Israel does. It's what they do because they don't care about international law. They've made that clear. And I'll include this article that Derek just put out. Are the violations of the Mexican-Iranian embassies a sign of a new normal in diplomatic relations? It's a great article. Very, very data-based and oriented, and it gives you the breakdown of what this will do and what it affects. And it's important. Make sure you check this out. Now, going on to just before this, Elon Levy says, 30 years after the bombing of the Israeli embassy and Jewish community center in Argentina, confirms the attacks were organized, planned, financed, and executed under the direction of Iran. I wonder why he would put that out there. Like, it's just so clumsy and reactive. You're just going, they violated everything when they did this thing back here 30 years ago, even though the idea of whether that's even provable is a whole other conversation. But so what are you saying? So that's a big deal, right? That's why we have to respond. Okay, well then, so you just go, we're going to break the law the same way? Well, yeah, that's what they keep trying to tell you. We're allowed to. Like they tell you when the Israeli government speaks publicly and says, we don't have to follow international law. We can legislate anywhere we want. Twice publicly, that has come out of the Knesset. Once recently and once years ago, talking about the West Bank. They're very clear about that. Now, not all of them, but the most belligerent, the Ben-Gvirs and Smotrichs of the Zionist religious party or religious Zionism party and the current coalition, they'll come out and say, we're going to kill them all. They keep doing it. In this case, the point is, it's very clear that all they're really telling you is that it's only a crime when they do it, which is pretty much what the U.S. government told everyone for a long time. But imagine, as I said, saying that. Imagine posting that after you just bombed the Iranian embassy. And you mean saying that's a problem, but because they did it 30 years ago, it's okay. Well, how about talking about that in the same context in Palestine, right? Aren't you the one saying, oh, it's a long time ago. You can't call up old history. So a 30-year-old thing is now usable to defend yourself? I mean, it's so abstract. Nothing means anything. Everything means nothing as long as you're Israeli. Now, we just talked about the Iranian embassy being attacked in Syria. You want to check that out. We have a part in there. I think I might have included it. I guess not. The discussion I had with Vanessa Bealey about this. It's important to check out. Now, here's what Trita Parsi says. Biden is doubling down on a formula that so far has been absolutely disastrous, he says. Parsi said Biden should have rebuked Israel for attacking the Iranian embassy. Obviously. Like, if you actually want the world to pretend or at least think that you care about international law, you have to maybe uphold international law sometimes. Maybe, right? But he says violating international law and endangering U.S. troops in the region. 100%. And of course, Jill Stein steps in. I don't trust any of these people. Doesn't mean I'm supporting her or anything like that. I hate that I even have to say that every time. So many assumers out there. But the point is that she says something. And I think a lot of these people step into this trying to play the right side of this. But she says Israel's attack on the Iranian consulate in Syria was a criminal act of war. It was, 100%. Now, I just argued about this with somebody online, which sometimes I waste too much time doing. Like the other day, usually it's very situational for me when I'm trapped in doing something else, or I'm you know, having to take care of something at a place where I have to sit there and just, you know, be a part, you know, a lot of times I'm there with my family and helping out and blah, blah, blah. And I'll just be sitting there and I can't do a show. So I just jump on Twitter. I just waste a lot of time arguing with people. Somebody asked me the other day, like, how I have time to do that. I really don't. Usually I just mute them all, but sometimes you'll see me go after it for a while. My point is that when it's interesting how people will say that person's this and that. So that's a stupid thing to say. It's like, well, hold on. Is the statement Israel attacks the Iranian consulate is a war, a crime? Is that now invalidated because Jill Stein said it? Is it not true because you don't like her? I'm just it's so frustrating how many partisan games are intertwined in people that otherwise, in some cases, don't know any better, aren't trying to be dishonest. And the problem is that we're very subjective in that way. The Twitter files conversation, a lot of this stuff is created, engineered the view that, you know, a statement is no longer valid if the person said it has a history, right? Or like, I think the point was I made a statement about, that's right. The point was simply, and I think this is still a very valid point. I think it was Jefferson that said you can judge a society, Thomas Jefferson, judge a society by the way it treats its weakest members. And I think it was Churchill, and these are just quoted as saying, because sometimes it's kind of foggy on who actually said it, but Churchill is quoted as saying, you can judge a society by how it treats its prisoners. And I think that's the way it went. And I simply added, I think more appropriate today is you can judge a society by how it treats its enemies. And I looked and I couldn't find anybody that said that. I'm surprised. I saw it on a show and I was like, that's a very valid point for today, right? My point is they were like, those are criminals, which I think, frankly, with Churchill for sure, definitely agree with that. But my point is that why would it be invalid if suddenly it's said by, if you look back and it's like, oh, like what if a KKK member said that? Does it suddenly make it not true? it's so strange how people think about things. Clearly, I think it's very valid as we see here. The way that they treat their enemies or the weakest among them or their prisoners, it's all kind of the same point. It really does show you who they are. I think we really need to think about that as we go forward. Look at the way that Hamas even is treating the prisoners that are being released, as much as they keep trying to lie about what's actually happening, at least as far as I can tell, compared to every single one of the people that come out of these Israeli prisons are emaciated. They've got cuts all over them. They haven't eaten. They've gotten a juice box every other day and that's it. Like, it's crazy. And it just really does show you that point. Now, I thought it was important to say, it popped into my head, but going forward, she says, as Iran prepares to retaliate, Biden's promise of ironclad support for Israel is insanely reckless. Really is. Putting the U.S. in the crosshairs and risking World War III. I ask the same point I said before. How is it possible that Biden is still taking this side? He has lost everything. I mean, clearly the Republicans don't want to vote for him. Now I see that pretty much all the Democrats are like, you're losing. You're right. Genocide Joe. What is keeping this going? Is it really just that he believes this? I find that hard to believe, frankly, since he probably doesn't even know what he believes at this point. But either way, there's clearly a detriment here. I ask the same thing. Why? What do they have on these people? I mean, it's really strange to me to see how I wasn't going to get into it, but there's a clip from Fetterman sitting on a bench and he's surrounded by like eight of his own constituents. And they're like, it just seems like this is racist. And it seems like you care more about Israeli lives than you do about Palestinians. I thought you were more balanced than that. And he just goes, I'll stand with Israel. And that's it. And it's like, oh, cool, man. So you just don't care what your constituents think. And you just, so basically you go, yeah, I do care more about Israelis than I do about Palestinians because that's right. You know, and he goes, I just stand with Israel. And it's just, how is that possible? Well, Fetterman is a whole special case. Like with Biden, I don't think these people really know half the time what they're even getting into or saying, but I've seen a lot of politicians that seem to be completely, like at least in the past, they would give lip service to their constituents like politicians do. They want the votes. Today, it seems more important to blindly defend Israel. Just don't miss how obvious that is. Now, getting into the beginning of this today. Now, I saw this come out right before I did the last show. And this was just saying breaking, Iran launches attack against Israel using dozens of drones. Now, I stand by this statement regardless, because it still even says, even if it turns out to be true, I really stand by this. And I think this is the most important way we need to think about this. I said, this very well could be true. But since the sources, as it says, four U.S. and Israeli officials told Barak Ravid, since it seems that the U.S. and Israel sources, it'd be pretty naive to just assume this is true solely based on their word, even if it ends up being accurate. They've proven themselves to be liars. And remember, the attacks could be real, but not Iran as well. That's before I looked, you know, the show was done. So I was thinking it could be Hezbollah or the PMU or whatever else firing something of their own accord. And they could just be like, Iran, and freak out. But as we get into it, you'll see that they've definitely taken credit for this, and which means it's likely their attack. But it doesn't add up to me, though, right? The point here is that, so they come out, and well, before I could jump past it, the reports like this that come out and say this is happening because the U.S. said, at the very least, I say they do cite that they said so. But it's just hard for me to jump into that knowing how many times they've lied. Like we just showed you before, right? It was that Jack Straw account that came out right after, like the day after, and said, Israel's already being bombed in Tel Aviv. And it was a lie. He had to delete the tweet. So that's where, you know, it's already happened once where we got this momentum going where it was all a fabrication. Interesting. So here is the permanent mission of Iran to the UN. It says, conducted on the strength of Article 51 of the UN Charter pertaining to legitimate defense. Iran's military action was in response to the Zionist regime's aggression against our diplomatic premises in Damascus. The matter can be deemed concluded, which I highly doubt that. The Israel and the United States are not. It's like Iran in the past has either not even responded, which again, I'll read to you in a second, or responded in a way that's like, okay, now we'll bomb a location in Syria, which nobody even knows is yours. It turns out to be Mossad headquarters, which it really was. But they do that because then it's Israel doesn't want to say that was ours because they don't want you to know that it's there. So they kind of just have to back away. And, you know, it worked. They responded. They didn't get a strong back. Not, well, there was kind of de facto responses, but not. It didn't seem like immediately there was a response. So as they say, this could be concluded. They get attacked. They respond. That does seem concluded. But the point is that the U.S. and Israel and a lot of the other players they associate with seem to be very, very childish when it comes to their responses. Very petty, just about one-upping each other, showing strength, very archaic mindsets. When in the reality, if you're in any way embodying what you pretend you are as the U.S. government, this would be everything you wouldn't be doing. You would say, yes, they bombed it, and yes, that was a crime. They responded in international law, so now this should be over. But they say, however, should the Israeli regime make another mistake, Iran's response will be considerably more severe. It is a conflict between Iran and the rogue Israeli regime from which the U.S. must stay away. Pretty interesting. Now, this is kind of developing forward. We're seeing a lot of these rockets flying late yesterday. Like, you know, look, coming from other groups. Right. I think a Syrian girl was talking about this, predicting that this was them trying to kind of wear out their response or maybe distract them with another response. Right. And so that's what she said. Looks like they're running down the batteries of the dome. But you can see all these videos coming from Hezbollah missiles and elsewhere in the dome. Basically, they claim stopping it. Then into today, this is IADF spokesman Daniel Hagari. They have a list, has confirmed that Iran has launched dozens of drones that are heading towards Israel. But it says it will take several hours to arrive. Which, by the way, doesn't even seem that that's what happened, right? Well, less than several hours, this started happening. So it's just interesting. I just don't, anything coming from these people where they go, we've confirmed it, to me, that's a knock in the wrong direction. That's going, well, it might not be true then. Just being honest. That doesn't mean I blindly dismiss anything. It just means because of how much they've lied about, provably, repeatedly, it's hard to take anything face value that they say or never should, really. Netanyahu also came out and said, for the past weeks, Israel's been preparing for the possibility of a direct attack from Iran. Our air defenses are deployed. We are ready for any scenario, both in attack and in defense. You know, just kind of telling you that we're ready for this and we're prepared. And I thought this was funny, by the way, before we get into the actual beginning of today's attacks. Disclose TV writes Biden to address the nation from the Oval Office 4 hours ago. Actually, this was more than that now. I guess about 4 hours ago. And then looks like, so this was 4:13 and then 4:32. Update. Now, never mind. Never mind. No, we're not going to do it anymore. I don't know exactly why, but I find that hilarious that it's like, you know, just clearly, I think maybe, I don't know. It's hard to read into that. Maybe it was them trying to stop it because clearly I don't think they care about whether it happens. I think ultimately they know that it's against their interest for the American population. Because everyone in the United States is clear that Israel's the one driving this, I think, anyway. The vast majority. That's my opinion. I could be wrong. Getting into the point here, Robert reports, this was just recently, Iranian missile strikes reportedly caused direct impacts to several Israeli sites. The video reportedly shows a number of missile strikes, sirens nonstop from north to south. This is a huge attack. The sky is filled with missiles and anti-air fire. Now, I can't confirm some of the things I'm seeing from in Israel. There's, I guess, videos circulating of Israelis kind of running and screaming through the streets. I really run a caution and advise against people from celebrating any of that. Yeah, I'm the first one that's going to point out that most of these people in Israel have been happily cheering on what's happening in Gaza. But a lot of them haven't, right? It's the majority. I think that's very clear. But there's a lot of people there, and a lot of them do not support it. So in any sense, whether or not it was all of them or not, they're still civilians and they're still manipulated by their Zionist government. And the point is, we should never be cheering on the suffering of civilians. This is the line that we all have to take as human beings with integrity, right? Just, you know, be the bigger person and realize that they, just because you may think they deserve it, doesn't mean you should cheer the fact that civilians are being targeted. And not to say that's what's happening. But on that note, the point is that clearly this is Iran is responding in a way that is a fraction of what the Gaza people, the Palestinians, have been suffering for 75 years, specifically the last 6 months. It's important to think about that. Their feeling right now is a fraction of what they felt in any one moment in Gaza this whole time, because it's just not even the same. Even the breakdown of all of this, the defense, it's the Iron Dome at the very least. Now, Freddie Ponton writes, the Iron Dome missile system has been activated and is intercepting these rockets that are coming in. And you can see there's quite a bit. Now, if it wasn't for the statements coming from Iran and the rest, I mean, I would, just like before, question whether this is even what we're seeing. Because a lot of times you can't even see the rockets because they don't have propulsion after the start, right? So you can't see them in the sky and all you see is the Iron Dome pop off. So I've often wondered in the past, and I know I've proven, by the way, others have as well, that there have been examples in the past where they make this up, where they just respond, they pretend they're responding to a rocket and they use it to justify an attack. Even Haaretz has written about that. So I always wonder about that, but this does not seem to be one of those cases. Freddie also writes, by the look of it, the Iranian drones may just be a means of diverting air defenses from their missiles that were coming in, which kind of seems to be the case. Too much warning to catch the Israelis' defense off guard. And so maybe that explains why it was okay that the drones were being acknowledged, right? That they were focusing on the drones. He says, and with U.S. support, he doubts the drones are the real plan. Unless Iran is not interested in inflicting too much damage, which that does make sense, or Iran missiles will be launched from unexpected locations as the drones reach their airspace, which kind of seems to be what happened. I-24 News reports that U.S. forces have begun intercepting Iranian drones in Iraq and Syria. So it's interesting that they're already involving themselves. And I don't know if this means that they're intercepting them on the way to Israel or that this is being directed at Iraq. I find it hard to believe that Iran would be sending drones to attack Iraq and Syria, right? So it seems to me this would be on the way. Sarah Abdallah reports, 6:10 p.m. today, Iran's retaliatory missiles are now hitting colonies and Israeli occupation forces bases all over occupied Palestine. So the illegal settlements. And which, by the way, if you want to break this down in the sense of, like, let's just pretend like they're claiming that Iran is just part of all of this, or Hamas is Iran, or vice versa. Well, then you can argue, which I don't agree with, by the way, but you could argue based on their broken logic, that that means they have the right to attack. These are illegal settlements. Right. So they're talking about areas that are set up and be illegal in the sense of the occupation. Now, this is where it gets really murky. And I think this is a very clear example of what human shields really look like. When Israel is petitioning civilians around the world to come and, like, bolster this, like, barrier between them and the occupied areas, or rather on the occupied areas, illegal settlements, according to anyone in the world, it's especially when you've got settlers that are armed, and especially since you've got them have been given official capacity since this, arguably makes them legal military targets. But that's a debate, because again, it's a hard line when it comes to civilians, and there's plenty of civilians that are going to be there, but Israel's putting them there. Again, my line would be, you can't target civilians. You have to stand that line. But it says that they're targeting those, and the executors of genocide continue to remain in their shelters. Always. Now, Aria points out nonstop sirens. You can see that, like, the location of the map where it's all over the place, sirens going off everywhere. Gotta be pretty terrifying for the civilians. There's some images for you. Middle East Observer pointing out the documenting Iranian missiles hitting their targets. Now, I think Syrian Girl was arguing these are hypersonic missiles. So there's the example of the missile. Now, this was 6/11 was posted. So this is after of the drone conversation. So it seems like there's some merit to what Ponton was saying. This one says more impacts on Israeli positions. Reports that hit that this is the Ramon military airport. So those again look like missiles or rockets of some kind, and they are hitting the military airport. You know, unlike the targeting of the civilian airports like we often see from the U.S. government in Israel. Sirens everywhere, numerous confirmed explosions. As it develops, you can see that it's broadening out. Now here, the Cradle reports Iran does indeed launch massive retaliatory attacks on Israel, citing legitimate defense. Not just the right to defend yourself in a broad sense, but the actual term legitimate defense directly from the, I think it was what, chart 54, I believe. Make sure I say that correctly. Yeah, or excuse me, the Article 51 of the UN Charter, and taken directly from it, right? These are now. This is my point about, like I said earlier, when I follow up tomorrow, I'm probably going to pull this up, break this down, highlight the actual article, and go over all this and talk about this so we understand it like we usually do. That's important to understand why this would be a legal response. But it says the Iran's Revolutionary Guards late the 13th in basically launched the retaliatory strike, firing dozens of ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, as well as massive swarms of drones, sirens activated. Here is the response from the official Khamenei account. You have the gray check and everything, 1 million followers, which is funny to me. You know, it's like, so you have, even the U.S. just generally says Iran is terrorism, right? And yet they just let them have a massive account, 1 million followers on Twitter, which I think they should, free speech and all. But what's hilarious about it is they've done that. They've attacked and removed other people. Like they've removed Press TV, for crying out loud. But they allow the, like, it's just so inconsistent. It just shows you there's something more to this story, as always. But here's what they had to say. Now, when I went through this earlier, I didn't seem to think that this was, it didn't seem very transparent that he was going like, we did this. But this does seem to be the video everyone's pointing to suggest that they claimed it. But it says Zionist regime will be punished. And I'll read you the subtitles. He says, but the malicious regime itself, which is all malice, evil, and error, added another mistake to its own errors by launching an attack on the consulate in Syria, the Iranian consulate. The consulate and embassy offices, which it was the embassy, which we will say, in any country where they exist, are regarded as the soil of the country to which the embassy belongs. That's why I was saying it's important. So politically speaking, legally speaking, they bombed Iran. I mean, that's really how anybody would take that from a legal and international law perspective. He says attacking the consulate is like attacking our soil. That's why I think they responded this way. This is what a common... It said, this is what is common around the world. As far as I could tell, this is one of the very few breaches of this. And in fact, you can show the Zionist government has done this in the past more than once, which that should tell you something. It says the malicious Zionist regime has made a wrong move in this case. It should be punished, and it will be punished. I mean, to me, that doesn't seem to really, you know, unless there's another video that I'm not seeing, that it very clearly shows that they're going to respond, which I think we already knew. They were very clear about that, right? So, but that doesn't seem to suggest that that's like, we're about to do this and we claim that attack kind of thing. But again, to be clear, they very clearly did state publicly that at least from the UN consulate or UN account that they did, or they do. Spectator Index says Israeli senior officer is now, and this is just 6 p.m. tonight, this is CDT, tells state broadcasting authority that the country will respond strongly to the Iranian attack. So that's the first statement saying that we're going to respond, which, you know, you'd expect. I quite frankly don't see how it's even in their pot. I don't see that U.S. and Israeli governments capable of not responding like Iran has done before, by the way. They're just not capable of that kind of restraint, which speaks to who they really are. They are reflexive and emotional and belligerent. That's very clear. I think anybody with honesty is going to tell you what you can show their policy, the way they were, the way they just bombed an Iranian consulate with no concern for what that would do. Now, developing further, interestingly enough, and this makes me think that there's more of that planned here. Apparently, Palestinians in the West Bank have now begun tearing down the apartheid wall. Iran's counterattack has inspired an uprising. Or maybe there is some overlapping coordination with this being aimed at the Israeli ongoing genocide. Oh, it's just showing them tear down the wall. Now, from over that, I don't really see any kind of other actions happening here, like where there's like a coordinated effort around that, but maybe there is, and we just haven't seen it yet. Now, here's where I wanted to get into. Now, I really do think, even after the fact, that what Robert wrote here is important and just well broken down. So he wrote, Iran's response to Israel could drag the U.S. to war if it continues backing Tel Aviv, which right now seems to be the way this is going. So he says, over the past few days, the U.S. Biden administration has contributed to stirring up chaos over Iran's pledged response to Israeli airstrikes that destroyed the Iranian's consulate in Damascus. Despite this situation clearly being of Israel's making, a narrative is being concocted, as we showed you earlier, to suggest Tel Aviv is the victim, as usual, and that Tehran is preparing an equivalent of an unprovoked terrorist attack. Now, it says almost two weeks have passed since Israel carried out an unprecedented attack against Iran's consulate in Damascus, murdering 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, their military, the most prominent of which was Mohammad Reza Zahidi. Now, despite how much they keep screaming that there's a terrorist, this is the equivalent of them murdering Milley while he's on a diplomatic mission in somebody else's consulate, or rather, while he's in the U.S. consulate in a foreign country. It's just, that's, as any American right now, you know how you go, that is wild. Now, it should be just as upsetting and wild to you that it happened to Iran. No matter what narrative Israel's spinning, it is a huge line that's been crossed. Now, if you don't seem to care about that because they're telling you X, Y, like, again, the point that I made before, which is the best way to frame this, even if you think they are terrorists, the point is, if you actually break down the international law, this is not the way to go about that. They can deem them persona non grata, which is where that term comes from, which basically means that they have to be removed back to their country, and then they deal with it from there. That's how that's supposed to go, right? The anything that's around that, that's called terrorism. And instead, they just bomb it and murder them. And again, like my point before was, like, let's say the U.S. government, right? Let's, as we've seen with the Taliban, as we've seen with any number of groups, decide to go, hey, we want to have a discussion with ISIS. I'm using ISIS because it's the most obviously perceived terrorist group for most people, right? So the U.S. government says we want to have a meeting with them, which, I mean, it shouldn't be that abstract, essentially, since you know that they are working with them and armed them, fund them, and created them. But you can show examples like with the Taliban, which the Taliban was called, they're called a terrorist group, and they're the reason they invaded Afghanistan, apparently, as they were told anyway. So it's not that far-fetched to think they could have a meeting with ISIS, right? So they have a meeting with them about some kind of agreement to downplay something or whatever. So why wouldn't that be like any other country be like, well, they're just terrorists. They're working with terrorism, so we can bomb their consulate. But the consulate or the embassy, that's where they would have these kind of diplomatic relations. So it's the same difference as them saying, you know, so it, with Iran being present and they're only Iranians being there, that's very ridiculous in the first place. But just the claim of saying, like, in the sense that that would be the only reason to bomb them, but just simply saying that Iran's there and we deem them terrorists, this is why so many are so worried about what that opens for other despotic nations. By saying, okay, well, fine, then we think you're terrorism and we'll bomb you anywhere we can. You open that door. And then again, we saw the Mexico-Ecuador overlap immediately. And I think that they have broken this in a way that is really, that is going to make it more unsafe for Americans, for Israelis, for everybody. Not because of Iran, because of Israel. Now it says, while the missile attack represented an egregious violation of international law, and in fact, 2 country sovereignties, like think of that's the worst, that's the craziest part. It was both Iranian territory, but it also violated Syrian sovereignty. Nobody cares about any of this. It's so insulting. In addition to being an affront to global diplomatic norms, it was also a direct strike against Iranian territory. It has to be understood that no nation would stand up stand by and simply allow such an unprovoked aggression, tantamount to a declaration of war. I mean, it is a declaration of war without response. It says, when the issue was tabled by Russia at the United Nations Security Council in an emergency session, the U.S. prevented a condemnation of the event from being passed. Think about this, guys. This keeps happening. Most people don't even hear this stuff. So then Russia brings this up and condemns the act, which is a clear violation. Nobody disagrees with that. Not even the U.S. They don't even talk about it. And then they stand up and condemn. They stop it. They prevent that from happening. They veto it, or whatever the term would be in the case of the Security Council. Gone. Now, why? Was it not a crime? No, it was. They just don't care about the law. And they got the power to do that. Anyone confused about that at this point? We need to see that for real. And it says, essentially robbing the government of Iran of any political or legal recourse. And then when they respond outside of political legal recourse, you call them terrorists, if that even happens. My point is that you create the situation to drive them outside of the legal avenues and then criticize them for doing anything else. Or like with Palestine, you drive them out of anything else. Then they initiate BDS and you call that terrorism too. But it says, at least in the short term, there's no legal recourse for that exact action. Now it says, for further context, it should be noted that the Syrian Arab Republic, as we've pointed before, has repeatedly attempted to appeal to the UN over hundreds of unprovoked attacks by Israel against his territory, striking ports, airports, civilian and military infrastructure, crimes upon crimes upon crimes upon war crimes, all of serious pleas to the United Nations, which have been ongoing for years, mind you, have fallen on deaf ears and been blocked by the United States. Why? Because Syria, bad guy, which means we can do whatever we want and we're in charge and nobody else matters. Nothing. It's proving to you that they don't care about anything they claim they do, as long as it's against somebody we don't like. Or even in general, by the way, if it's not balanced and equally applied, then you don't really care about it. Permitting repeated attacks, acts of war crime, without any pushback against Tel Aviv at all. Understanding the situation in Syria and the sensitivity of the regional situation, Iran's Revolutionary Guard had taken the approach of attempting to de-escalate tensions during some 6 months of Israel's genocidal war in Gaza. Repeatedly, by the way, this clear policy on Iran's behalf of attempting to maintain a system of conflict management was in place despite repeated provocations from Israel, repeatedly killing Iranian civilians. In late December, Israel assassinated Saeed Raza Mousavi, one of their Revolutionary Guard members, in an airstrike it conducted in the vicinity of Syria's capital, which was a crime, no question. Iran was faced with a difficult decision at the time, which the Revolutionary Guard had studied and debated internally. And this is important. Ultimately, deciding to launch a retaliatory attack in January, which we covered at the time. The Iranian response came in the form of a series of missile strikes that blew up a Mossad headquarters in northern Iraq, right? Didn't bomb Israel, bombed Iraq, and in a location that Israel doesn't want everyone to know is there. So it was excellent. I mean, that was very strategically played. So you had to kind of force them to not, it didn't give them the opportunity to stand up and say, they attacked us, because it's like forcing Netanyahu to sheepishly admit they've got nuclear weapons in order to make a point. They don't want to do that, right? But it says, in addition to missile launches that allegedly hit ISIS-linked targets in the Idlib province, that was both Iran's response, both the Mossad headquarters in Iraq, and Robert writes allegedly, so we can't prove it, ISIS targets in Idlib province. But we clearly know Idlib province is a U.S., overlap, really, like, let's say, NATO partners-controlled area that allows very clear terrorism to be... Same with Al-Tanf and the Al-Rukban camp. These are very clear hotbeds of terrorism that the U.S. government allows to fester for their benefit while pretending they're fighting that, while bombing anyone that actually fights them. And it says, the significance of the Syria strike at the time was simply to show people in the world, and specifically Israel, that they were in fact capable of bombing to Tel Aviv, which they're showing you right now. Although Israel was made to pay a price for the assassination, Iran decided to use its retaliation as a means of warning the Israelis, as opposed to doing what you expect Israel to do, and maybe they're going to do now, which we're going to get to in a second. What they're threatening seems to suggest a nuclear attack. I'm genuinely worried about that. So here, Iran has done everything, it seems, to try to not allow this to go out of control, which, of course, people that don't like Iran are going to laugh about that. But the facts are very clear, And we've gone over this intensely. It says, in what appeared to be Israel's way of calling Iran's bluff, later in January, the Israeli Air Force struck the Meza neighborhood in central Damascus, murdering five more Revolutionary Guard members, right? These are Iran's military. So just, again, think about it. Milley and, you know, name 11 other U.S. generals and high-ranking military members. And just imagine if any other bad country that they say bad guy, Russia, China, we're just popping off shots and just killing two U.S. generals. And then a week later, here's killing a U.S. scientist. And then over here, killing three U.S. citizens and one general. And just nobody cares. Can you even imagine that? That's what Iran's been dealing with. And in many cases, not choosing to respond because they're trying not to let this explode because they clearly see what's happening for Palestine and the larger movement around it is very important. And I think that's what a lot of this is about, trying to distract from that thing that Israel's been doing, genocide. Where were we? It says, but this time the Iranian military made the decision not to respond, even though they killed five members of their military, despite the devastating nature of the illegal Israeli strikes. For Iran, the idea of not retaliating directly was calculated to provide a potentially explosive escalation regionally, to prevent an escalation. And this attempt to prevent such an escalation ended up coming at the expense of their own deterrence and even its image of strength. Not the real strength, but the way people may perceive that strength. Now, at the start of April, Israel's decision to blow up the consulate in Damascus changed everything. This flagrant violation of all previously understood international norms represented a major shift, putting Tehran in a position where it was forced to respond. While the U.S. quickly took to distancing itself from the attack, Israel refrained from officially taking responsibility directly, even though it's in every which way been proven that they did this. It was clear that Washington must have had some knowledge of Israel's intentions. And Tehran has made it clear that they believe the strikes were greenlit by the United States. That's important. So it says, what will Iran do and where will this lead? In recent days, Western mainstream media have gone into a frenzy and appear to be conjuring up a number of unconfirmed claims regarding what Iran's response will be. CBS News recently cited unnamed U.S. officials claiming that Iran had readied some 100 plus drones and missiles, which now seems to be somewhat accurate. Again, why that makes sense, I'm confused about. And even Robert said the same thing. It's confusing, but it does seem to be what's happening. In order to launch a direct attack on Israeli military facilities, while others have released speculation on what the response may look like. The U.S., Canada, Germany, and the U.K. and other nations have requested their citizens immediately leave Israeli territory. Joe Biden has addressed the press on the issue, stating that the attack will likely come soon. And when asked his message to Iran, remember this is before today, regarding its pledged response, he stated, don't. Which is just usually what he thinks is, I guess, a strong stance. And then Pompeo tweets today, but I guess something like, I guess don't didn't work or something really stupid like that. Like, just why do you think that's going to change anybody's mind? Like, don't. Ooh, we're afraid. Like, it's just the illusion that the U.S. government is this, like, yeah, clearly they spend more money than anyone in the world combined on military, but the illusion that they're somehow this big, like, Iran, and actually, I'll wait to say, there's a whole post I'm going to read about this, and the reality of whether the U.S. government or Israel can actually wage a valid war against Iran without coming out completely destroyed is ridiculous. That's not to say that they don't have more money spent on all sorts of weaponry and stuff. The bottom line is based on the reality of how it's to play out. Just like Israel's currently finding out with Gaza right now. It's not the way it's not what they project that matters. It's the reality on the ground. Saudi Arabia also realized that with Yemen, right? Clearly finding out it's not as simple as just having all the money. But it says the U.S. has also repeatedly moved its warships into the Mediterranean in order to defend Israel, in quotes, while asserting that its two primary goals are to ensure Israel's right to self-defense and, of course, the safety of Americans. Right? Always Israel's self-defense seems to come first. Isn't that very telling? The bottom line is this has nothing to do with self-defense. As he says, however, in this case, after the Israeli Air Force bombed Iranian territory and carried out three separate attacks against Iranian officials, Israel has no right to self-defense here. It is, in fact, Iran, which has a clear right to retaliate. Or, as Israel would frame it, the right to defend itself, should we decide to use the Israeli-U.S. government definition, which seems to indefinitely apply well after immediate response in one's own defense, the actual meaning of the phrase, in my opinion. I mean, I think that's very, the point is that defending yourself is not about acting 6 months later, right? That's not defending yourself. That's retaliating. Defending yourself is when you're in the midst of an attack and you fight back. It doesn't mean you don't have the right to retaliate. The point is simply that using the right terminology is important. And the reason they use defending yourself is to make them a perpetual victim. It's what they do. And also, it's more so than that, actually, it's the Bethlehem Doctrine. If you can create the reality that you feel like you're being attacked, you can argue your response is always preemptive self-defense. That's just what they live by. The UK, the United States, and Israel. Look up the Bethlehem Doctrine. It's very clear. We've covered it in the past. But he says, in this case, yeah, we just read that part. Saying, in addition to this, American involvement in any Israeli aggression against Iran will not help protect U.S. forces. It will do the opposite and put them in harm's way, which is something the U.S. government is very well aware of. Meanwhile, as Biden and the administration appears to be ready to back Israel in a potential war with Iran, it refuses to even pressure Tel Aviv to adopt the policy of restraint. It's just so belligerent. According to an informed Syrian security source that spoke on the record with The Last American Vagabond, Israel has indirectly threatened to launch, and this is really alarming, a decapitation strike against the government in Damascus. That's the term they use, decapitation strike, should Iran attack Israel, which is happening, and even begin removing minefields set in the Golan Heights, reportedly, that would enable its forces to invade Syria. So again, right now, that may be happening for all we know. Make sure in the chat, let me know if something big is happening. Oh, somebody did text me here. Let's see. But I really do think that's, it really does speak to the most alarming aspect of this. That what they're really saying is we will always push this further, even if you're in the right. And I think that just, that's something that we all obviously should be very concerned about. So let's see here. We got, just double checking something in case if you see anything happening, we want to make sure we include tonight. Let me know. Oh, so this is just a post that we'll, I'll include this in a second. Hold on. Oh, I guess I'm just going to pop up now if I show it to you. We'll come back to it. Okay. It was a statement from Putin. We'll read it at the end. So it says, it appears to be an attempt to pressure Iran, yet could indicate that they are indeed ready for a major regional escalation. Like he's basically saying that it could just be that they're saying this to threaten Iran and that it's stopping them, right? But I kind of don't think that. I think that we've seen enough to show you that these people are really that crazy. And it says, what Iran may do is a question which is not simple to answer. The targets that are open for them to hit are numerous, and it is likely they will strike a series of military sites, which seems to be happening. But which sites and how much value those targets will hold will determine how large the escalation will be. However, the bigger question is how Israel will respond to the Iranian retaliatory strikes, which is where we are now. On Saturday morning, the Revolutionary Guard decided to seize an Iranian-linked ship in the Strait of Hormuz. We'll cover this in a minute, just briefly. It's important to see. They seized a ship, which reportedly, according to pretty much both Robert and Lowkey and other reporting is on this, and history, and I looked up the background on this, the company called Zodiac Maritime, and the actual ship, I believe, where I think it's written in here. I'll come back to it. I think it's the MSC Ares. The company Zodiac Maritime is a notorious group that has been called out many times for being a basically secretly working with the U.S. Israeli military, weapon shipments and everything. And so that also adds, which I wrote down there, by the way, but I'll just read it. It says, on Saturday morning, the Revolutionary Guard decided to seize the Israeli-linked ship in the Strait of Hormuz, which is operated by Israeli billionaire Eyal Ofer's company, Zodiac Maritime. According to Iranian state-run media, quote, the ship has now been guided towards the territorial waters of our country, so Iran. While Israeli military sources were quoted as saying that Iran will bear the consequences of the action, and this is just before this happened tonight, it is not yet clear what the exact reasoning is behind the Iranian seizure of the ship, MSC Ares, but it has been speculated that the Israeli-owned company that has ownership over it may have been planning action against Iran, which again is the historical reality of this group. So this may have been a building attack coming from Iran or Israel that right there could have been the attempt coming to be some kind of false flag attack that they preempted. But it says in 2021, Iran's armed forces targeted a ship called Mercer, operated by Zodiac Maritime. with two loitering munitions. At the time, they all claimed it was an unprovoked attack. However, it was later revealed that the reason behind the attack was likely because Zodiac Maritime is known for its close connections with the Israeli military and has had a long history, read the link there, operating as a front company to transport Israeli military intelligence operatives under the guise of commercial shipping, which is a massive crime. But the U.S. government does it too, because, you know, they don't care about the law. This is a very important factor, by the way, to consider regarding Yemen's targeting of Israeli vessels. Doesn't mean you should blindly assume that that's all that they attack, but I argue there's probably an overlap there. Now, it says a major question remains. Did Israel launch its attacks on the Iranian consulate, having already prepared a strategy to escalate tensions, planning to use whatever Iran does to attack that strategy? That's what I think is the reality. The question is key because if Tel Aviv wants Iran to respond, as they just did, it doesn't matter what Iran does. They will use it the same way. I think that's where we are right now. If this is the case, Iran should hit extremely hard, which seems to be the logic they decided as well, to set the pace of any future escalation and be in a dominant position. But this comes at the cost of throwing away the policy of containing the war in Gaza and attempting to help reach a ceasefire there, which they have been, in a way, being seen to be embarrassed many times to try to make that happen. So there's just no way you can stand back and pretend that they're belligerently responding or that's an unprovoked attack. They have been ignoring the probes and pokes and red lines being crossed multiple times, and now they're being forced to respond is the way that seems very clear to me. And he says, ceasefire talks between Hamas and Israel have now, again, seemed to have broken down. While speculation has led to people on all sides of the political spectrum throwing about the idea of a mass coordinated attack against the Israelis, and some even suggesting that nothing will happen at all, the truth is that we have entered uncharted territory here. Which, again, may explain why it seems confusing. It makes no sense for the U.S. government to commit itself to a war against Iran, but this could occur, as we have seen the American leadership embarrass itself repeatedly in the Red Sea and fail to put a dent in Yemen's Ansarallah, the Houthis, they call them in the United States, despite declaring their costly Operation Prosperity Garden, their costly Operation Prosperity Garden. Guardian, I can't talk. And now, I thought I put a link right there, but the point, we're going to talk about this in a second, which I hadn't seen. Arnab Bertrand writes this. I think it's right here. Apparently, just recently, and this was the 11th, the U.S. government has conceded, offering all sorts of concessions and going like, we'll stop this, we'll stop that, just stop bombing our ships, which is pretty wild. We'll come back to that. But he says, it appears as if the Biden administration is living in an alternate universe and has not been able to navigate the current terrain in the region, operating with the mindset of 2003 when it invaded Iraq illegally. This lack of strategic or rational thinking from policymakers in Washington is frightening, to say the least. At the end of the day, the U.S. could have ended the ongoing conflict in the region with a single phone call, yet refuses to condemn or punish anything the Israeli government does. Again, I ask, what do they have on them? What is the pressure point here? How is it possible that they could destroy everything they perceive them building? Like, whether they're talking about the Great Reset or any of these, I mean, they've blown up everything here for the defense of Israel because their belligerent response has woken up the world in some cases. It's just pretty wild. So this, again, is now this has now happened. So going past this to a couple points, and we might want to touch before we go past this online and see if we're missed anything, but Michael Ruiz made a good point here. And this is the same thought that I can't get rid of. He says, it's only World War III if you're glued to your screens. And of course, he shows this soothing. And he says, nobody even knows how much of this is just smoke and mirrors. Like, we should even stand back larger and be like, maybe they're all involved. Maybe everybody's lying to us and it's all a big wag the dog kind of situation. I don't believe that. I genuinely think there's stuff happening, but of course we should ask the question. His point is, many have become so addicted to fear porn, the partisanship of it all, that their whole life is just a reaction to mainstream narratives. Take a break and go outside. I mean, gosh darn it. I very much agree with that. So just consider, you know, maybe there's something we're not seeing. Maybe it's all being lied. I mean, just always keep that in your mind. Now, Elijah Monnier points out, Iran has managed to destroy several military locations, many in the south, and in particular, Negev Airport and army facilities. So they have very clearly had a successful attack here. The possibility of Israel responding is much higher now due to the damage it has suffered. So based on Robert's point, I think they took clearly option B here to go hard in hopes that that demonstrates that they're going to keep going harder and that Israel is ultimately blustering. Because I truly think, regardless of the belligerent, you know, theocrat, like these people that are blindly, like these mad Zionists that are clearly going for no matter what, they're not the entirety of these government decisions, right? And I think that it's clear at this point that, as we'll get to in a minute as we end, that Israel's lost this. And I think they're all becoming very aware of that right now. And so this was a last effort, I think, to try to push something. That's what I see it as. But AIPAC points out, of course, Iron Dome saving countless lives tonight over northern Israel. Thank you to Democrats and Republicans in Congress for supporting this remarkable system. Just a quick reminder that they all support Israel and that they all send your tax dollars to defend Israel, even though they don't need your money. And the Spectator Index writes, Israel's Channel 12 reports that a senior Israeli official, I'm going to guess probably one of the extreme Zionist level individuals like Smotrich or Ben-Gvir, has vowed an unprecedented response is coming to Iran's attack and tells Israelis not to go to bed due to what is coming. That's correct. I mean, okay, so that two things clearly suggest that they're going to respond soon. If it's go to bed. Secondarily, what is an unprecedented response, guys? They've used chemical weapons. They've used white phosphorus. They've used all sorts of illegal munitions. I mean, logically, if they really do mean unprecedented, when often they say that just to make a big statement, that means nuclear weapons. I don't know how anybody can be stupid enough to make that happen. But if there's anybody right now that seems like a group that would, especially when they see themselves about to lose a la the Samson option, that would be the Israeli Zionist government. It worries me. It truly does. And I'm not one to hyperbolically, you know, fearmonger. But unprecedented, if they mean it, I think that only goes one direction. At the very least, it would be so many locations and so many bombs that it would be unprecedented in that way. But, you know, I feel like unprecedented response says something. And this, again, this is, they would be in the wrong in every possible way, which is pretty much what we're seeing here. Now, Breaking 911 reports the White House spoke up. Biden has been clear. Our support for Israel's security is ironclad. The United States will stand with the people of Israel and, well, they're standing with the government of Israel, first of all. The people of Israel are, in some cases, divided on this and ultimately right now are against what Israel wants in regard to the ceasefire agreements. So it's not the case. This is what U.S. wants the Western audience to think Israel's all in one. It's not the case. The same way the U.S. government projects to the world that we're all on the same side. Americans are wildly divided. So just think about that. But it says the United States will stand with the people of Israel and support their defense against these threats from Iran. Right. Clown indeed. I mean, you know they broke the law. The U.S. knows that. Everyone in the world knows that. And yet the U.S. government just doesn't care. So much for the so-called rules-based international order, huh? I guess it only applies for certain people, obviously. Now, I wanted to read a statement from Robert that he sent me that I just because, you know, he I wanted his update from what he sees and what's happening here. A lot of it's kind of what we already read, but I wanted to read you so what he has to say. Now, I'm going to try to connect with him soon. And I reached out to Vanessa Bealey as well to kind of do, maybe we'll do both tomorrow. I'm not sure how it'll work out, but we want to connect to get their expert opinions. I mean, there's very few people on the planet right now that I'd want to talk to more than Robert and Vanessa Bealey in regard to what's going on. And Eva Bartlett, for example, as well. I just, you know my opinion of all these people. I think they're true independent journalists, investigative journalists that don't really exist in corporate media at all, for that matter. I mean, as a literal point, by the way, if we report in the past, they literally removed the investigative journalist position from most corporate outlets. I mean, pretty embarrassing. Now, he writes, so far, it appears that Iran had launched a series of suicide drones in batches. They have acted to distract the air defenses, which seems to be the case. So they ultimately were waiting to fire the missiles after that. Behind them, there have been ballistic and cruise missiles. He doesn't seem to suggest anything about a hypersonic or the missiles that Syrian girl was suggesting, but the explosion did look interesting. So we'll have to follow up on that. And he says, behind them, there have been the ballistic and cruise missiles. And that may even be an overlap to the same point. But it says an airbase was hit in the Negev. A number of the casualties throughout the country, So there appears that there have been civilian casualties, I think. But again, this is preliminary. So the casualties very well could, I mean, I find it hard to believe with that kind of a broad attack that you can pinpoint target only military targets. So right there, in the same case, you would argue that that does cross some kind of a line, right? But at this point, and it's the same point with Yemen and everything else, why would they follow the law if nobody that they're fighting with is following the law? I'm just saying from my perspective, where we all need to be as consistent as we've ever been right now on these kind of things. That's why I've been consistent about saying that you can prove that Hamas very clearly did commit crimes. Where, I mean, that's just the case of taking a child civilian hostage back to Gaza. In regard to most of the rest of them, you can show that most of them were IDF or settlers or police, and that it seems that most of the people that were killed, even according to Scott Ritter and others, were by the IDF. But that doesn't change the fact that there was crimes committed by Hamas. That's just being consistent. On the same point here, if it turns out they killed civilians, we have to discuss that in the same light. But I will argue the same, that there's no reason why somebody would take the line of acting in the way that nobody else is. It's the same way that when Israel attacks the consulate, well, suddenly they're showing you that there is no international law. That's not what I want to be the case. I think we all need to fight to maintain some semblance of at least guidelines. Otherwise, you get the people like the Zionist government that act however they want. But it goes on to say, the entry of Palestine-Israel, the entirety of Palestine-Israel, lit up with missiles and anti-air fire. Hours worth of waves and much bigger response than anyone was expecting. Israel has reportedly authorized a retaliation on Iranian soil. Iran has vowed a quick retaliation to anyone that strikes it. So that's in response to, they're saying if Israel retaliates, we're going to retaliate right back. So this could very easily spin out of control, guys. And says anyone that strikes it, and warns that if Israel hits them, the next strike will be much stronger. Yemen, Iraq, and Lebanon also launched missiles and drones at the same time as Iran. This could result in a huge regional war. Now, this is what I'm saying before. If there's any logic in the minds of the Israeli government right now, and we'll get to the point about their own, I mean, the Haaretz is writing an article right now saying the Israeli government has lost this war. That's like today or yesterday. Regardless of that, it's obvious that they cannot take on Iran and Syria and Lebanon or Russia, if they get involved, which it seems they might, or any number of other groups that are clearly supporting this, even with U.S. support, they cannot stand against this. And I think that's very obvious. And so it's interesting. I would argue that if there is any logic, that Israel will find a way to not do what they're claiming here without making it look like they didn't respond. Like something, however that looks, that's what I feel like would logically be the right response here. So it's not an escalation and Iran could act like they just responded and kind of maybe, and then even then still maybe pull back and say, okay, because that's what Iran seems to do every single time. I hope that's what happens in one way or another, that this actually does not spin out, because it worries me that that could actually happen. And there's very few times in my time in doing this where that's really been the case. Now this is the point that we were pulling off to the end. This is simply saying Putin said, well, again, see, this is somebody sent this to me. So I hate screenshot reports. I just can't confirm this. I shouldn't even read it. The point is they're claiming that Putin says Russia will defend Iran if America retaliates to Israel. You know, anyway, so I just hate the idea of Twitter file screenshot journalism. Let's see. Oops, misspelled that. Well, let's see if we get one, and if not, we'll move forward. Yeah, well, I don't see anything, so let's just go ahead and we'll just leave that as if it didn't happen, because I can't confirm that. Now, going forward, to finish this off, concerned citizen writes, Iran has never previously attacked Israel before. So tonight is definitely a huge escalation. The world will look to America and Joe Biden's teleprompter response as to what comes next. And that worries me. This is always how this tends to work, is that they stand up, just like with Donald Trump and the COVID-19 conversation, and just grab the microphone and go, this is the narrative. And everyone follows suit. Mark my words, in this just war and Israel, it seems that everybody walks the same. And the point is that in this case, if they come out and set some kind of war narrative and Biden comes out with the you know, with that right location with the red lights behind him and just makes the statement, I mark my word, both sides of the two-party illusion will toe that line. Mark my words. Even though that doesn't make sense with what we're just going through or any other circumstance, it's because that's the crack through the door. You're seeing the full government, not the pretend division. And I wanted to play a couple of clips here that I think are very relevant before we finish with one other point, and then maybe check Twitter real quick and anywhere else to see if there's any more updates. But let's remember, as I played the open, even if this is exactly what it looks like, which does seem to be the case, which is Iran responding, it's not hard to understand that this has been driven into reality. As Robert made very clear, they're poking, murdering, bombing, attacking, violating law everywhere. And then Iran responds even when they have a justification to, and Iran's responding unprovoked terrorist attack. And this is what they've been trying to create.
I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough. And it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us to war with Iran. Which leads me to conclude that if, in fact, compromise is not coming, that the traditional way of America gets to war is what would be best for U.S. interests. Some people might think that Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II, as David mentioned. You may recall we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. Some people might think Mr. Wilson wanted to get us into World War I. You may recall he had to wait for the Lusitania episode. Some people might think that Mr. Johnson wanted to send troops to Vietnam. You may recall he had to wait for the Gulf of Tonkin episode. We didn't go to war with Spain until the USS, until the Maine exploded. And may I point out that Mr. Lincoln did not feel he could call out the Federal Army until Fort Sumter was attacked, which is why he ordered the commander at Fort Sumter to do exactly that thing which the South Carolinians had said would cause an attack. So if, in fact, the Iranians aren't going to compromise, it would be best if somebody else started the war. One can combine other means of pressure with sanctions. I mentioned that explosion on August 17th. We could step up the pressure. I mean, look, people, Iranian submarines periodically go down. Someday one of them might not come up. Who would know why? We can do a variety of things if we wish to increase the pressure. I'm not advocating that, but I'm just suggesting that this is not a either-or proposition of, you know, it's just sanctions has to succeed or other things. We are in the game of using covert means against the Iranians. We could get nastier at that.
That's Patrick Claussen from the Washington Institute, right? And this is a very public clip. What they're speaking to is obvious, that false flags have started pretty much every major U.S. war. And you can prove it. And they're blithely talking about that like it's no big deal. Just a blasé. You know, it's just how we started. You know, going back to Lincoln, I mean, it's just so wild how obvious all this stuff is. And of course, we could fold in things like it's not necessarily a war starting, but the false flag. I mean, it's a Israeli attack that was lied about. So it's kind of a weird example, but the U.S. is liberty, right? Where your government just manufactures lies to cover for what Israel did, even though they killed Americans. Now, here's another example I think is important to include. Just showing you what they've truly been doing to try to drive Iran to respond, right? And here is Giuliani. I think this is like 7 years ago. And what he's doing, this is something that Caitlin Johnstone wrote about. He's discussing publicly, which I don't think he thought people would even see, but he's speaking to the big crowd of the MEK, which is at one point was a documented, acknowledged terrorist organization by the U.S. government. I forget who took him off. It might have been Clinton or somebody, but they took him off. I think that was it, but I don't want to say that and be wrong. Took him off the list. And now they're basically an asset of the U.S. government. And they're actively, I mean, and this group is crazy. If you want to talk about extremism, I'm not going to get into it all right now because it's just off the top of my head, but there is some crazy information that's provable, even coming from U.S. information about what this group really does. They're very repressive and they're very it's manipulative and theocratic and sexually controlling of their own people. It's crazy. And doesn't matter though, because it's the group that will help them fight against the Iran group, which is far more moderate than this crazy MEK group. Not that you won't hear that from Israel, U.S. government, but it's the truth. And they just want to, it's just like the U.S. government and Israel funding the most radical elements of everything they claim they're fighting, because the more moderate elements don't want to bend over for what they want. That's why Israel funded Hamas and still does, as far as the leadership, as far as I can tell, and continues to arm and fund and work with all the bad guys they claim they're fighting. You can prove all of this. My point is, here's Giuliani speaking to that MEK group and literally acknowledging that we have starved Iran to the point to where they're so desperate and hungry, they're selling their organs for food. And he goes, this is how you create a good revolution, or whatever he ends up saying. I mean, admitting that you're driving that against the civilian population and that that's the best way to create this. That's the truth. It's one of those moments where you get the truth. It's the same thing they're doing in every other case. They're starving the Palestinians. They're starving the Yemeni. They're starving the Syrians. They're starving the Venezuelans. That's what they do.
Don't tell me that you're not a serious threat. If the regime we're trying to overthrow sees us as a threat, you are a threat. It is a reality. The protests are getting worse. I don't know when we're going to overthrow them. It could be in a few days, months, a couple of years. But it's going to happen. They are going to be overthrown.
Talking about Iran.
The people of Iran obviously have now had enough. The sanctions are working.
Okay, right there. The sanctions are working. So that's talking about unilateral U.S. sanctions, which are technically illegal because it's not supposed to be one country doling out sanctions. It's supposed to be an international body deciding. But this is just, no, every country does it now. China and Russia both seem to do it. But it's just, they're, by and large, most of it comes from the United States government. And so the sanctions are aimed, they claim, at the government, right? How long have people like us been saying it's starving the civilians? It's stopping medicine, right? And they go, no, you're a lying conspiracy theorist. Well, here he is about to tell you that those sanctions have led to the starvation of people and they're selling their organs. And that's how we know it's working.
The currency is going to nothing. They're where Russia was. They're where Poland was. We see signs of young men and women saying, give me some food. We saw a sign of a man trying to sell his internal organs for $500 American, probably a fortune in Iran today. This is truly pitiful. These are the kinds of conditions that lead to successful revolution. And
my God. Guys, these are the worst people in the world. I mean, this is the worst thing. And this what I always say. You're not just doing the bad thing. You're doing that and then pretending to be the good guy. It really creeps me out every time. And I don't know whether these people convince themselves they are the good guy or not. Frankly, I don't think they do. I think that these are bad people. You are praising and highlighting the starvation of civilians to the point to where they sell their organs for food. And you're going, that's how you make a good revolution. That's the truth of all of this. They're doing it now in every other location we talked about. That's important to understand for this conversation. What do you think? Do you think that maybe's driven Iran to act a certain way? It's crazy. Now, the ship, the last couple points we're going to get into, it's important to realize that just before this, Iran's Revolutionary Guard seized a container ship near the Strait of Hormuz, which again is that very important waterway that I think is about to become a very important part of this, because Iran can literally shut down the one of the most important waterways for shipping and oil. And they've threatened that many times, which is what I've shown many times, which is why they went after Yemen to act to control the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. They already control the Suez Canal. So if they control the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which they failed to ultimately do, they can try to work another direction. But I think right now they're in a position where they've trapped themselves. Either way, this has started to happen, and this is before the attacks today. Now, Low Key points out the MSC Ares ship, which appeared to have been seized, was owned by Zodiac Maritime, which we just told you before. And he says it's a documented fact that Zodiac Maritime has a history of transporting Israeli elite units, which is a crime, into the region, carrying out assassinations in the UAE and Iran. Nobody seems to care about it. Zodiac Maritime is owned by the billionaire Israeli Offer family, and despite its history as a front for Israeli intelligence being covered by both the Times and Mint Press, I believe the Times being the UK Times, it has remained a British registered company. So they know this. I mean, the Times is the one that reported about the U.S. military bringing in assassination groups from Ukraine into Russia. You know, so clearly they've reported that it happens all the time, and these rules-based international order lackey just don't care. Because they don't care about what they pretend they're fighting for. Oh, and here's the links, by the way, so you can check it out. Israeli stealth ships in raids on Iran. See, I mean, it's provable stuff, guys. Here's even Ynet News. Afir ship took Mossad agents to Iran. That's Israeli media, guys. And yet, the U.S. government and everybody else, just nobody cares. Just to let them violate international law because why? They told you they can. We can do whatever we want. We can violate anything. Elijah Manyes points out that they are sending multiple messages to the U.S. and Israel, Iran is, by seizing the Israeli-owned ship. One, it is in no way a response to the violation of the consulate bombing. I agree with that. It is a response to Joe Biden's messaging to Iran saying, don't. And Iran says, what will you do now? Number three, responding to U.S. officials saying that the U.S. will defend Israel and by any means necessary, Iran says, show us your move now. Number four, a response to Israel's bombing of Iranian logistic warehouses in Syria, which is a different bombing, which, again, it's just so many crimes that nobody talks about. Ratcheting up tensions with Israel right before the big hit, which is exactly what just happened. Cutting off the land route provided by Israel by the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Jordan by offering Israel a port at the Jebel Ali where goods are transported via the TruckNet Israeli Elat base company to bypass the Yemen Ansar blockade. The Strait of Hormuz will be closed in a case of war, which is what I was just talking about. 20% of the world's transit and oil comes through there. Expect inflation and oil prices to reach sky high if this conflict continues. That's another point that I keep seeing made. This realistically could cause oil prices to go outrageously high. Now, in the interest of time, I just briefly talked about this, but Arnaud Bertrand is writing, there's rarely been a more extraordinary military failure as Operation Prosperity Guardian. It's almost unbelievable. He says, think about that. An operation announced by Lloyd Austin in December as a broad coalition of everybody, the U.S. Navy, the Royal Navy, the Royal Australian Navy, Royal Bahrain Naval Force, the Royal Canadian, I mean, oh, on and on and on. So many countries involved against the Ansar Allah movement. That's it. At the time, the Pentagon was all gung-ho, right? Telling everybody they really need to ask themselves if they've bitten off more than they can chew. And he's highlighting all this, showing you that when they're writing about it. Maybe they don't know what they've gotten themselves into, right? Showing you all the different groups aligned just against the Yemeni Navy and the Yemen, basically the Yemen government. But as it turns out, they hadn't. 3 months later, the Prosperity Guardian Coalition is apparently currently suing for peace and offering an extraordinary array of concessions. They don't want the world to be seeing this. This is being reported by other, I think this was The Cradle and other outlets, including lifting Yemen's siege entirely. Which is huge. That hasn't happened. They've been starving that country for decades. Repairing the damages, removing foreign forces from all occupied Yemeni lands and islands, and removing Ansar Allah from the State Department's terrorism list. Think about that. Ansar Allah, undeterred, get this, in response to those concessions offered, they say, we will continue operations as long as Israeli aggression against Gaza persists. Wow. I mean, guys, think about that. It shows you that they're like, fine, you're offering us everything we've ever wanted. And we're going, not until we get what we want in regard to Gaza. I mean, I haven't seen more of an integrity-based stance from anybody in the world in regard to Gaza than Yemen. I mean, I'm not saying that that is what they truly are caring about. I can never know what people's intentions are. But to me, their stance has been continually the only government body that has been standing truly behind what the Palestinian people are fighting for. Post-October 7th, I mean. And now they're saying, we won't even take this massive deal. I think what this shows is the U.S. government recognizes that until they stop what Yemen is doing, that they're not going to be able to fully be able to help Israel, right? Or Israel can't help itself. So they've recognized, and still think about this again, to the point about what they have on them. They're now giving up this massive decades-long starvation tactic to, I mean, for what? It's like Afghanistan, 20 years of act for nothing, just to continue to support Israel. It's mind-blowing to me. And it's also incredibly embarrassing for the United States government. Now, a couple last points. We have Grant Shapps saying, Iran must cease their destabilizing behavior immediately. It's just so crazy what kind of things people will say when we're watching the U.S. government bomb and destroy countries, Israel's committing open genocide and bombing consulate buildings, and Iran responds to that, and they have to stop their destabilizing behavior. I mean, again, this is somebody who's just saying this because that's the narrative they're supposed to be spreading. He also says, seizure of the cargo ship, the MSC Ares by Iran, get this, an unacceptable and blatant violation of international law. It's just, my God, The idea, and I'm not even going to disagree that the ship, well, again, the point is it or is it not being used by Israel for military purposes? Remember, we have even Israeli media that's telling you that these ships and that company is basically a front for Israeli military. That changes everything. My point, though, imagine saying that after you just ignored them bombing the consulate, after you've ignored them carrying out a 6-month genocide. Some people are just really ridiculous. Now, I kind of wanted to wrap this now. I don't have much time. I'm going to include this for you. Alon Mizrahi just points out a really great breakdown showing you that in every direction, they're basically surrounded by people that are currently against their agenda. That in every basic way right now, it's very clear that the U.S. government is aware that they know they can't win this. Or maybe they're not, but that's the reality on the ground. And I think an analyst that's not very clearly biased to one side of this is telling you the same thing. So it's important to think about. The U.S. cannot win this war against Iran. He says, and I believe all parties involved know that. He says, the only thing that remains unknown is how insane and self-destructive the U.S. has become under Netanyahu and AIPAC's, how shall we say it, influence. I completely agree. Now to finish, I want to just wrap this up quickly. I wanted to highlight a couple points for you. In regard to the, and I'm going to go through this again because this deserves more focus. The Cradle's reporting, and really Channel 12, Israeli media is reporting, it's a leak from the Israeli negotiation delegation, which, by the way, is exactly what we've been telling you from day one. Netanyahu, and this is coming from Israeli media, Netanyahu is obstructing the exchange deal. They don't want the hostage back, guys. And the negotiations in this current form may last a year. They're trying to stop this. That's what the Israeli families have now come aware of, and even 972 magazine is telling you that. That the Israeli population is screaming for them to take Hamas's deal, and they're just pretending that's not the truth. He says a deal could have been reached 2 months ago, but Netanyahu didn't listen. He says we would get the authorization in the morning, then Netanyahu would call in the evening to obstruct the negotiation. He has bypassed the heads of the negotiating delegation and the war cabinet as well. This guy is something special. I'll tell you. I mean, these guys are very dangerous. Now, I wrote, this is exactly what anyone honest has been telling you. It's being reported by Israeli media, and yet Western partisan players will claim it's fake news. It's been clear since the first week of the post-October 7th ongoing slaughter of Palestinians. They've offered a full exchange for a full exchange for a full ceasefire lasting. Doesn't mean permanent. I mean, it should mean lasting, but it doesn't mean ceasefires always get broken, and Israel has broken them pretty much every time I've ever seen them be involved. Nonetheless, to argue that somehow stops them from doing something is a joke. Full exchange, humanitarian aid, ceasefire. That's what they've offered since the first week. And it's only the Israeli government that keeps playing games, and everyone's starting to pay attention to that. Aviva Klompas, so they murdered the hostages. So now they're putting out this game. We just told you before. They're saying they can't even find 40 living hostages now. And what I said this for the first couple weeks. What happens when they kill so many hostages that then they ask for the ones they know are dead and then claim that Hamas is the one violating it? It's already happening. Hamas may not have enough living hostages. And she goes, they've murdered them all. No, that's certainly possible. But why does Aviva know that? Is she a Hamas member? Does she work for Hamas? Is she in Gaza? No, she's just saying what the narrative is that works for them. Could be true, but she doesn't know that. I don't know why anybody say that. It's very clear. That's the same way any politics seems to work in the two-party game or dishonest political spheres where they just scream whatever works for their side and then act like you're the bad person for not blindly assuming it. But I'll include the link to the Hamas director, the Hannibal directive. I simply said, you are right. They probably did. We're talking about the IDF, right? The truth. The IDF has killed the majority of them. Dan Cohen adds to this in regard to an overlap to them killing their own people, killing workers, as well as the human aid. He writes, the Israeli colonel who ordered the drone strike on the World Central Kitchen aid workers, he actually signed a letter in January calling on the military brass to straight up deny humanitarian aid to Gaza. We know that. We've been reporting that, but everyone seems to lie about it within certain circles. He says the World Central Kitchen killings weren't a mistake. They were an act of defiance directed at the Netanyahu war cabinet and its Western backers. He's a link to his report. You can read for yourself. And it says the IDF completes the job of evacuating residents from Gaza City, does not allow humanitarian supplies and the operation of hospitals within Gaza City. it's very clear they've been denying all of this. So the next point is from the Telegraph. Top IDF commander in aid strike wanted to block humanitarian supplies to Gaza. It's not just Dan Cohen. You know, the reality is everywhere if you just care and you're not completely blinded by racism and hatred for one type of person. And I'm only talking about one side here. And that doesn't mean that there's not some of that everywhere, including in Palestinian sides. But I'm talking about what's guiding leadership here. You're watching this entire leadership, or rather, I hate even use that word, this entire rulership in Israel just gleefully carry this out. And literally, in every other moment, telling you they're doing it. And here is another example. They're telling you, we made sure to stop the aid. And we're talking from World Central Kitchen. So this whole thing is built up with Israel saying we're taking part in it to get it to the people that they're stopping anyway. And then we find out that they bombed them anyway and stopped them from doing it. And then act like, oops, it was a mistake. And everyone eats that up that doesn't want to report the right story. UNRWA points out, this thing I've been saying the entire time, which is the absolute truth. This was not a nutrient-rich environment before October 7th. This is Scott. I'm not even sure who that is. It might be the wrong tag, but it looks like this Scott person tells the Associated Press, the article's right here, why levels of aid entering Gaza since the war started have compounded an existing pre-war nutrition deficit. Meanwhile, only trickles of aid are reaching northern Gaza. Still to this very day. This is the 12th. They're lying about it. They always have been. Everyone's becoming aware of that. The point is that even if you suddenly, which they may start doing, dumping aid in an area through one crossing, which can't even facilitate it all, especially due to your ridiculous 3-day-long check process, that you need more than just extra food at this point. They were already nutrient deficient. Now they're at famine level. That requires more than just food, as the UN, other people are now screaming about. They need medical treatment. They need saline drips. I mean, I overlapped it with other historical examples of mass starvation and famine. You can actually kill somebody in that stage by giving them something to eat, or like milk was the example in the past. I don't even understand the mechanism there, but I've done research on that. It is a real thing, and I found that really interesting. So as they keep maybe start dumping food on them, realize that's not even enough. Evan Hill points out the Washington Post, contacted 25 aid groups, the UN agencies and donor countries, all to ask about aid delivery to Gaza, which shockingly seems like they're doing some real journalism here. But it says, and I'm willing to bet you the article itself kind of gaslights or cements other false things, and that's usually how this works. But it simply says they asked about aid delivery to Gaza and found out that Israeli authorities have denied or restricted access to items ranging from life-saving medical supplies to toys and chocolate croissants. Oh my God, we're shocked. You all know this. It's so infuriating that we still have to fight back against these public and easily proven conversations. He says, I think it's unprecedented, Shayna Lowe says, a spokeswoman for the Norwegian Refugee Council. I guess they're all Hamas now somehow, whatever works for them. Said of the Israeli restrictions, says it's just nothing that aid agencies have ever had to deal with. Look at some of the stuff they're refusing. Oh, anesthetics. Yeah, that must be Hamas can use it as a weapon, right? Animal feed. No, that's food. In fact, it's food that they're being forced to eat because they have no food. That's also why they're not, and also food for their animals, which they can maybe live. It's all designed to create suffering. Chocolate croissants, crutches. I've already shown you all this, guys. Maternity kits. It just makes me so sad. All this stuff. They are actively punishing and torturing these people. And here's a sad video of more of that happening. The children, Hala, Fadia, and Zachariah, suffered severe burns after their home was bombed by the Israeli army in southern Gaza. You know, the safe area. Children are the primary victims of the Israeli genocide apparatus, she writes. I guess those are Hamas members. I'm sure Israel will tell you that. Here is an example of what's going on in the West Bank. A Palestinian is killed as Israeli settlers rampage in his village and troops fire on stone throwers. Yeah, in case you missed that, that means the IDF are absolutely there giving fire, cover fire to the illegal settlers who are attacking and murdering defenseless Palestinians. And then as people throw stones in defense of themselves, they shoot them too. You know, freedom or democracy, as the U.S. government would call it. And as this continued, according to the head of Al-Mughayr Village Council in Ramallah area, 1,500 illegal settlers attacked the village, killed a Palestinian and injured with the Israeli army 50, including many with live ammunition. They burned 70 houses and structures and many cars, and they are still attacking the village. This is completely not just supported. This is co-opted. This is, what's the better word for it? The U.S. government, the Israeli government is a part of this, right? They are actively letting this happen or are making it happen. They are there alongside them, giving them cover. There's nothing about this that anybody can defend. That's why nobody will bring it up. Not the U.S. government. Nobody. Even Biden pretended to put sanctions on these people until Smotrich pushed him back and he said, never mind, and stopped it. Because, you know, they care, right? I mean, you know, you realize there are Palestinian Americans that are there. There are Palestinians of all sorts of other ethnicity or other backgrounds all over the world. They're there. Does nobody care about that? I guess we only care if it's an Israeli overlap, right? One person is confirmed killed. This is just a person updating on this. 10 injured, one severe headshot wound. Israeli army has shut down all entrances to the village. Why would they do that? Oh, I know, to stop the ambulances from coming to help them, because they do it every time. Because that's how they show that they care. Limiting access to Palestinians to the village, but doing nothing to stop the settler pogrom in the village. Right, so they're in there still murdering, still bombing, still destroying. It's more so seemingly about the houses. Clearly, this is about removing them from the area, but stopping any help from coming. Now, I'm just going to include this. I was going to play this, but I want to get done for 2 hours. I have to get out of here. A great video from Fiora Isabella highlighting the story we were talking about here. Shot by the IDF 11 times and imprisoned. My ground report from Jenin. Now, this isn't the exact dynamic. This is just talking about in the West Bank and what she saw and what's going on. You know, so a real journalist telling you what they really saw on the ground. Lastly, and this is a point that I was saying before, this is coming directly from Haaretz. Saying what can't be said. Israel has been defeated. Pretty embarrassing for them. Saying what can't be said, Israel has been defeated, a total defeat. The war's aims won't be achieved, they write. The hostages won't be returned through military pressure. Security won't be restored, and Israel's international ostracism won't end. It says we've lost. Truth must be told. The inability to admit it encapsulates everything you need to know about Israel's individual and mass psychology. There's a clear, sharp, predictable reality that we should begin to fathom, to process, to understand, and draw conclusions from for the future. The Cradle writes, just kind of highlighting, and they wrote this another the same article, highlighting the same journalist from Haaretz saying this. And it says, renowned journalist, Israeli journalist, Chaim Levinson, published a piece in Haaretz saying that they've lost. Total defeat. It says, quote, Hamas will not be eradicated. The hostages will not be returned. Security will not be reestablished. To Levinson, Israel is being, quote, held hostage by the worst leadership in the country's history and currently has no diplomatic exit. Again, this is what a lot, even Israelis that don't want Gaza to be there and want them all to be gone, still feel this way. This is beginning to appear to be the majority opinion based on a lot of people I'm talking to. The hostages in Gaza will never return. Now, I want to be very clear about that again. That's not to say that most of the Israelis or any overlap we're talking about or now is suddenly in support of Palestinians. I think it's very clear always to point out that it seems obvious that the majority of the population are wildly racist toward Palestinians, but not all of them. And again, there's large groups within Israel and other parts of the world, Jewish groups and others, that very clearly don't agree with that. That's not the same thing, though, to say that they, regardless of what's happening to Gaza, are recognizing that their government is not acting in their interests or the interest of their families. In fact, the Israeli government's acting against everybody's interest except the Zionist movement. That's the truth. Now it says, the hostages in Gaza will never return. Israel will not regain its security. He cites lies, procrastination, deceit, and denial in dealing with the war. He also points out that the Israelis may not be able to safely return to the northern border following Hezbollah's cross-border attacks. The public is being deceived into thinking action will be taken against Hezbollah, but that, the quote, the deadline keeps being pushed back. They know they can't go against Hezbollah. That's reality. But it says, as for the Rafah invasion, I should say, take it back. And this is what I think the same point is about all of this. They know they can't do any of this without the U.S. and others stepping in. Even then, I think it's clear that they can't win even then. But I think the point is, Israel's hoping that the U.S. government gets pulled like they're trying to do right now. And maybe that will draw in the rest of the other axis, like NATO and everything else. And then you really will have a world war, which, by the way, we've already been involved in for a decade now or longer. Even more. Like, we've been multi-countries involved in one location war for a very long time. Any other time in history, that was called world war. It just, they don't want to say that now. That's the point, though. And it says, as for Rafah invasion, Levinson calls it the newest bluff. That's interesting. And that by the time it actually happens, if it happens, the actual event will have lost its significance. Now, I don't know if I agree with that in the sense that I think that there really is an intention to do this. And I think that it's just the fact that they're not, because it's recognized that it's going to hurt their interest in the long run with U.S. support. I think that's what it really comes down to. But either way, I ultimately agree. And last point, this is another Haaretz article. Another concept implodes. Israel can't be managed by a criminal defendant. This is 2023. It's not new, but it's October 9th. It's just before October 7th, excuse me. And so the point is that they're already highlighting this. And this is what we were saying just long before this. The judicial reforms, the fact that he had multiple indictments. Like, the people don't like Netanyahu. He's a criminal. And they all say that. And the corporate media says that. Now, all of a sudden, this all shifted. We're refocused. The point was the same. I think the reality was trying to create the idea that it's only Netanyahu, try to shift the blame if they need to. Either way, recognize this person does not have the support of anybody other than other belligerent Zionist supporters. And I guess that's all they need today. And why does that make sense? What is it that they can do that causes that kind of blind support against the interests of the people supporting them? That's a question I want to end on and make you really let you reflect on, because it is something. There's something going on there. And again, everyone that wants to hide this is going to try to pretend that we're secretly talking about Jewish people. It's the obvious opposite of that. Like, that's what's so embarrassing when you get in these arguments with people online where they just jump right to the fact that, well, you know, you hate Jews. And it's like, is that the best you have? Like, it's very clear that what we're doing is actively defending the safety of the Jewish population against Zionism, or really anybody. Anybody being oppressed, whether they be Jewish or Muslim or Christian or, you know, religion, we're talking about there, or in regard to ethnicity, which is not a Jewish concept, that would be Israeli or American or British. The point is, it doesn't matter to me. I defend the people that are being attacked or oppressed or are being misrepresented that deserve it anyway, right? The point at the end of the day is that that applies to any of these people. And in fact, right now, I feel like more than anybody, or maybe save less than save for the Palestinians, that I'm fighting for the Jewish community, showing them that they're being attacked, being sacrificed by the Zionist organization. And there are also a lot of other Jewish groups like Torah Judaism and others around the world that are trying to get your attention. Now, their account has rightfully exploded since then. I think they got like 300,000 followers now. So people see their message, which is, as always, Zionism is not Judaism. Zionism does not represent Jews. Israel is not the state of the Jewish people. They've repeatedly say this, and which is why they get beat up by the IDF, even in Israel, even though they're Orthodox Jews. Interesting. But we'll leave it there for tonight. Actually, well, let's just very quickly take a quick glance just in case there's anything else that might be going on here. Iron Dome fails, somebody's saying here, which, not surprising. Iron Dome is a POS, in my opinion. It's a big fake, really. I honestly think that. Doesn't mean it doesn't work, but it does not do what they say it does, and we've spent billions of dollars on. You have. Hey, look, there we are. I'm surprised. Where are we at? Oh, I just passed 2 hours. I got to get out of here. But so I don't see anything hugely standing out. Max says Wolf Blitzer is leading CNN's coverage tonight. Guest after guest is a tool of his former employee at AIPAC. Of course, I could have told you that. Each one clamoring for the U.S. to attack Iran. See, this worries me. See, I'm not going to go into this tonight. the response of the, you know who they're going to be, the Lindsey Grahams, the Rubios, they are going to come out in the most, they're ridiculous. They're cartoons of what we pretend. Like, if you were, I'm trying to think of the best analogy, but it just the simplest way to put it is they are acting in a way that I think they know is unsustainable. Like, they know that they won't continue. If they act the way they're saying, it'll all explode, we'll all be dead. But I think the point is that I genuinely don't think that they actually, I mean, they could just be that crazy. But I think it's about them either on behalf of Israel, which is what I think it really is, or just of their own interest and lobbying and so on. They think this is playing a role for the interest of what they're trying to accomplish. So they come out and they're trying to drive the response that worked for the agenda, and quite literally at the expense of the people that they claim they're actually standing for, the American people. He says, as Netanyahu once said, America is a thing you can move very easily. 100%. Now, I don't know. I don't trust some of these people, what they're saying. Pelham says, Israel has requested an emergency UN Security Council meeting after Iran's retaliatory attack. Of course they do. Hey, Hamas, right? Because they're saying UN is Hamas, just like I always tell you, right? So the UN is Hamas, unless we're the ones that we want to call on the international community. You need to defend us. Oh, you mean like you didn't want the, I mean, it's just so pathetically obvious. If the UN is a corrupt terrorist organization working for Hamas, then why are you calling on them to fight for you? And even then, if you don't think that, and you're just lying about it anyway, why are you ignoring the UN when they ask you to do something or demand or legally binding, but then go to them when you want something? It's childish, guys. At its core value, it is pathetic. I think we're going to leave it there. I don't see anything breaking right now, but we will follow up, guys. We will follow up. I don't know if it'll be tomorrow, but we most definitely will follow up. If something that big happens, I'm sure I'll be breaking up, jumping on tomorrow. But in any case, thank you for tuning in tonight. I appreciate your support, guys. And I appreciate your staying tuned tonight after two shows. I think it's important that we break this down in a very objective, nonpartisan way, as always, and do our best to be accurate and not jump to conclusions or drive war for the interest of a two-party paradigm. So just be skeptical, guys. Be careful and ask questions. We always have to recognize that even if it's exactly what it looks like, there are players trying to use it for their interest. So just be on guard, be skeptical, and, you know, as always, question everything. I love you all. Question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
After 9/11, about 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me in. He said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, "No." He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq. Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran." I said, "Is it classified?" He said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Well, don't show it to me." And I saw him a year or so ago, and I said, "You remember that?" He said, "Sir, I didn't show you that memo. I didn't show it to you."
I'm sorry. What did you say his name was?
I'm not going to give you his name.
So go through the countries again?
Well, starting with Iraq, then Syria and Lebanon, then Libya, then Somalia and Sudan, and then back to Iran. So